Let us turn to the chapter we have read in Exodus 21 and seek with God's help to look at some of these verses that we have read from 12 to the end of the chapter. For those who were not here last time, we have seen and noticed some things that God has provided for the servants about slavery in the first 11 verses of this chapter. And what we have found out actually, and what we have said, if you remember, is this: these chapters from 21 and a few more are, although may seem a bit strange to us because they are speaking about a context where these people were living there, yet they have a great importance because they are actually an application for Israel of the Ten Commandments. And so we have seen, for example, in this chapter, we do read and notice the importance of the sanctity of life. It is nothing else that more details or applications in real life about the sixth commandment. And also we are told that there are seriousness of sins, and because of sin there are dramatic consequences that God takes seriously, the disobedience of his commands. So these few chapters after 21 are indeed an application of the law of God. So there are principles here, although we cannot fully transfer all these details in our time today, but surely there are principles that we can learn from. And we may look at, in this portion that we have read tonight, three main areas regarding violence, regarding the disobedience of the sixth commandment: you shall not murder. But there are various aspects that God is putting into practice and spotting, so we may say, for them to understand in real life what this may mean. And so we have the first portion, we have God speaking about various crimes. Then we can find, and we shall see, another portion from verse 18 onwards, when men strive together and so on. There are various injuries that can be caused in various situations. And lastly, from verse 28 to the end, there are various cases of negligence, but there are in which there are serious consequences as well. So these three aspects we are brought to our attention. And the first one is crimes, the killing of men. Verse 12 is crystal clear: if someone smites a man so that he dies, he shall be surely put to death. That's what the law required. That's what God said. Murder must be punished. Life for life. And the premeditated killing of someone else's life, God said his life must be taken. Now this was clear already, even before the giving of the moral law by Moses. There is no contradiction here when we read, "You shall not kill." Because that word in Hebrew, "you shall not kill," is indeed pointing to murder. It is not execution, but it is murder. You shall not take a life, deliberately, a life from another man. And that God will not take as innocent. But interestingly, there is also in verse 13, you notice God has brought to our attention the possibility that someone may kill someone else by accident. There is a difference there. There is a difference in motivation in the hearts of men. And that is so peculiar of the moral law and of what God says in the explanation and in the application of His command. He goes right to the heart and thoughts of men. That's what no other legislation can do. But God does. He makes a distinction. He says, if someone intentionally kills someone else, it is different than killing someone else by accident. And if someone, we read, someone lie not in wait, meaning he's not deliberately trying to kill someone and go on after him, but God delivers him into his hand. It's an expression that means in God's providence, when something happens and it just, this man dies. It's not intentional. Then God says, I will appoint thee a place whither he shall flee. And we find this in the book of Numbers, in the book of Deuteronomy. You have all heard of the cities of refuge. We are not going into this detail tonight, but it is so interesting to realize and see that to avoid unjust revenge by those who might have been the relatives of the dead, in this case someone who has been killed accidentally, the relatives had the right of revenge upon the murderer. And God provided cities throughout all Israel, various places where such a man that found himself guilty by accident, he could flee and take refuge in these cities so that the elders would not kill him as well. He would be free. And God provided justice in bringing a refuge in one of these cities through Israel. So this is the first aspect that God is describing regarding murder. But also we find in this context a description about parents and their importance and how they should be respected. Verse 15 to 17. That is, by the way, going back perhaps a little to the fifth commandment, where God says clearly, you are to honor your parents. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God has given you. So there's a great importance in God's priority for parents. And so in this case, when somebody smites his father or his mother, it is seen as so serious so that that person should be put to death. But even verse 17, notice, if someone curses his father or his mother, they should be put to death. Perhaps something interesting to note here is that, especially for the culture of the time where women were inferior to men, but here God says, father and mother, both of them, without difference, there is the same punishment for this disobedience on this commandment, the same penalty, smiting either father or mother. They have an equal value in God's eyes. They are your parents and all of us have had parents. We have been brought into this world through them. And the authority that parents represent in God's eyes are extremely important. Not only smiting a parent physically, but also and especially not giving respect or speaking without respect toward them, cursing, arriving to the point of cursing father or mother. These people should be face death as penalty. Perhaps the Pharisees were in fact arriving to such point of despising father and mothers when, you remember, they were even adding their own laws and justifying their own behavior. When we read in the New Testament that they managed to be free from caring for some parents in their old age, they had all their ways of, so to speak, getting around the law and freeing their own consciences. But despising parents is as bad as killing them. And these people should be receive death penalty, God says to them there. Now, not only these crimes, but from verse 18 onward, we are given another aspect in various scenarios that may happen. We have the time when two people may strive or fight together and one of the victims is injured, is left perhaps even disabled, or we read here, he die not, but keeps his bed. This man has been injured. He cannot live his own life as before. So the man responsible for what happened here had to take care of the victim. One could not say, well, he has not died. That's not too bad. No, God says, you have damaged this person. You have to take care of him. You have to pay. You have to give a compensation. So it's not only death. It's not only crime which is seen in God's eyes. But it is the real respect for the person. And all these things are included in God's description and application of his commands. You see, it is a clear reminder that you cannot use violence to do your own justice or to sort out personal disputes. And that could have been actually so common in those days, perhaps much more than our days. Now, not only two men striving or fighting together, but see verse 20, there is the case where a servant may be damaged or smitten. Now, obviously, in those days, a slave was considered very low and esteemed very low. But God here again says clearly that although these men were properties of their master, in Israel had to be different. There should have not even physical abuse on slaves just because they were slaves. This was so common and it happened so often in other nations. But God here gives Israel a clear instruction that the life of these men was important. They were men, after all. So if we read in verse 20 and 21, if a man smite his servant or his maid with a rod, and he die under his hand, he shall be punished, surely. But notwithstanding, if he continue a day or two, he shall not be punished, for he is his money. and verse 26, we read the case of someone who is smiting the eye of his servant. He needs to let him go free. Verse 27. If he smite out his servant's tooth or his maidservant's tooth, he shall let him go free for his tooth's sake. Now that's the case in which someone has damaged so severely a servant. Now that man must be let free. The master has no power on him anymore. This was obviously not the case in any other nation near Israel. And then regarding injuries, we have this description of pregnant women from verse 22. If men strive and in this fighting they hurt a woman with child, so that her fruit depart from her, and yet no mischief follow, he shall be surely punished, according as the woman's husband will lay upon him. Now this means someone is hurting a woman with child, and this child has not died, but he is born prematurely. There must be a punishment there as well. Someone may not have said, well, I didn't kill anyone. That's fine. No. God is protecting here even the weak and the frail. Not only women, but even unborn child. That is a clear indication of the value that God gives to the life in the womb. Not only women, but to God, the unborn child is a human being. And in our societies, in our developed world, it is only a shame that we can read and hear of legislations that allow legally to kill those who are in the womb. Well, God here, so long ago, was already telling and giving us his mind. It is already painful enough to damage a fetus in the womb, but to kill it, it's awful. And this is what we are doing today, kill unborn children legally. But God here is protecting both mother and child. He is caring for those. There is another something else might be said regarding what we read afterwards, because God is describing after what has happened to the woman with a child, we read what a punishment should be right and seen as right. Verse 23, if any mischief follow, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, and so on. This shows us how the punishment must fit the crime, must fit what has happened. And so if something is so serious, it must be, so to speak, replaced or given the right compensation. That's where God is pointing us to understand. But perhaps if you read and if you go ahead with the behavior that the Pharisees used to live with, it is the very opposite. Because we can read and we can easily bring this principle so far to say If someone damages me, then I have the right for my revenge. That's what at the times of Jesus and throughout Israel, it was very common to take this as an excuse for clear, unmerciful revenge. If you hurt me, then I'll hurt you. If you do me damage, then I'll do damage. And if you stress this, it becomes a law without mercy. How can you square the teaching of Jesus when we read in Matthew 5 how the Lord is applying the law for His own people? Let us read just a few verses in Matthew 5, verse 39. There we have the Lord speaking to His disciples and giving His teaching regarding the law of God. You have heard, verse 38, you have heard that it has been said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law, and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asks thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. You have heard that it has been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. And so on. You see, that's the real purpose of God's law. That's where God indeed was pointing. And that's the extreme opposite where Israel, the Pharisees, and mankind, in trying to keep literally the law of God, would go at the very opposite. If someone would come to you and offend you, you would ask eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Strictly speaking, revenge at all times and at all costs. But God was saying this actually to protect those who were weaker and who had received damage, and those who were in need of being compensated. It was to point out the importance of human life and of the loss and of the care there Israel had to have for one another, even for servants. In all that we read here, there is God's kindness and mercy shown. In the application of the short commandment, you shall not kill. You see how easily sinners can twist the law of God and apply it for their own excuse. But God is giving all these details to show how able we are in applying wrongly what He meant. And here comes Christ clarifying for us all, well, you have read this, you have heard this, but this is what I tell you. If you are the children of your Father in heaven, then do this. Not eye for eye, but turn your cheek the other side. Give your mantle. Do 2 miles, an extra mile, and love your enemies. That is the spirit of the child of God. That is someone that has truly understood and desires to live by God's Spirit, His law. It is the attitude of someone who has not the mind of living up the law, trying to save himself, but has the mind of someone who knows that sin is in him and knows that God is looking to him in mercy through blood sacrifice, through salvation by grace. Christ is clearly expanding all this and giving us the true flavor of God's law. It is mercy, not sacrifice, that I need. Now, lastly, we see from verse 28 to the end, few things said regarding animals and what can happen to them, and what their owners should be doing. So not only care, but also positively taking steps to protect and to avoid damage. Negligence is not allowed here in Israel. Someone could have said, well, that animal caused this and that, killed that person. Well, that's not my fault, it's the ox. Well, God said, no, you're responsible for your own animals, and the owner should take care of it. But again, at some point we have read that there is also mercy, place for mercy here as well. Because although strictly speaking, there at one point there should be a death penalty, we read that also a payment could be demanded. If someone was dead, a ransom could have been paid. And so the relatives are allowed to take an indemnity, a compensation for the tragedy that could have taken place with an ox killing someone else. And then we have an interesting description of, in verse 32, a description of an ox that pushes a servant. God says, you shall give unto the master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned, and so on. But I think this is interesting, as reminds us what we have read in the New Testament when Judas accepted the payment for the betrayal of Christ. He received this very amount of money, 30 shekels of silver. That was the pay given to to someone who has killed a slave, a servant, by an ox. That's quite amazing to remember, that is the amount that Judas received. That's the payment that the Pharisees did give for the price of Christ, 30 shekels of silver. That's the price Jesus was sold for. And that's the value that Judas gave to Christ. The value of a slave killed by an ox. Oh, but you know that the Lord Himself, that God Himself, did value your life, dear Christian, much more. Because God accepted for payment of your life the blood of Christ. It is an infinite payment and precious blood of His Son. God did not value His children like slaves here, but with the precious blood of Christ. That is the price God paid to save and purchase you as one of his children. Let us remember this and be thankful for what Christ has done.